Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have a book club episode. So today we're going to be talking about the book Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. We had initially selected this book to read because it was a classic. And I feel like on this podcast, we haven't read that many classics.
The one I remember reading was Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Usually, I am not a big fan of classics, at least the ones I've read thus far. I don't know if it's just because it takes a little bit longer to read them. Like, they're not a quick read like a lot of modern day tales. But I will say I did like this one far more than I thought I would. So I was pleasantly surprised.
I wanted to read this one because I knew a little bit about it, and I knew that a lot of modern thrillers and suspense books have elements from this novel or were inspired by it in some way, so I thought it'd be interesting to read kind of the foundational book.
Yes. For example, I think we were talking about this earlier, and I was telling you how it kind of reminded me of Mexican Gothic, because it's like she goes to this mansion, and then there's like this guy, and the whole thing just reminded me of Mexican Gothic. I don't know if, because you listened to the Novel Pairings podcast on this, right?
I did. I listened to about half of it before I started, but I think it might remind you of that because I'm pretty sure they mentioned this. And again, check theirs out. They do a much more like literary take on it. Like they know all the background, which I do not. But I think this is technically a gothic novel as well. So that's probably why they overlap.
Yeah, I think it is. I think I saw that when I was Googling, because Google is the most reputable source.
So this is a suspense thriller gothic novel book. So I think right at the start, there's just going to be spoilers. This novel starts, there's a narrator who is unnamed and remains unnamed for the whole story. And she's in France. I think it's Monte Carlo with this rich American woman. And she's kind of like her maid slash servant slash like companion. And there she meets someone named Maxim de Winter, who basically is like a rich guy in England.
Correct.
And he has a big fancy house. So they go on this kind of like whirlwind romance type thing. And she ends up marrying him instead of going back to New York with the rich lady from America. And so she gets to this house and it's almost like, it's not a ghost story, but it's almost like she's haunted by his first wife named Rebecca. And a whole bunch of stuff goes down. There's a fancy ball, because what else do you do in a big English house? And then it's discovered, Rebecca's body's discovered, but she was already buried 2 years ago. And there's a whole trial, and basically, spoiler, Maxim killed her, and then they have to run away to Switzerland.
Correct. So, I don't know about you, but I felt like this was kind of a whirlwind of a book. Like, it was a very long book. However, I was like, oh, this is happening, like, right now. Okay.
I don't know if you felt this way. I thought it was a slow start. Basically, all the stuff in France, I was kind of bored. And then they got to England and went to Manderley. And then all of a sudden, I was just like, oh, okay.
Yes, I agree. I feel like once they got to Manderley, it really picked up. And I feel like you could really get that sense of her being, like you said, almost kind of like haunted by Rebecca, because there would be little reminders of Rebecca all over Manderley, whether it was the way that she used to do things or notes or trinkets or things or like dresses that she would find. Okay, speaking of Rebecca though, did you not find the scene with Mrs. Danvers or Lady Danvers? I don't know, however you say her name. Mrs. Danvers and our unnamed main character to be like really weird when they went through Rebecca's closet and she was like, touch this clothing of Rebecca's. Isn't it so nice? I was like, okay, all right. This is just, we just crossed over into real weird real quick.
I agree. I think that was kind of creepy. I think it is Mrs. Danvers, because I think she's like kind of a servant, but I feel like she was kind of giving creepy vibes the whole time. I think also this story is told through the narrator's perspective, so I wonder how much of it is skewed based on that, because the narrator basically spent most of this book being a little bit, I don't know if it's paranoid, but paranoid of Rebecca and like, she was afraid that Maxim still loved her and, like, Maxim didn't love the narrator. She knew Mrs. Danvers was, like, besties with Rebecca, at least from Mrs. Danvers's interpretation. So I feel like she spent the whole time just, like, preoccupied with comparing herself.
She definitely did. I feel like it was a lot of comparing herself and just a lot of feeling inadequate in comparison because she, you know, did not come from a really well-off upbringing. And she was like, now I'm expected to run this house and I have no idea how to do this. And I'm expected to network with these people. And I've never done that before. Like, this is so strange. So I think a lot of it was a lot of imposter syndrome, especially because she knew that she had shoes that she was filling.
I think it's interesting to the class dynamics in this book, because Maxim was super rich. He inherited this house. The narrator's not. The staff is not. And I guess that's all I have. But I think it's there's a lot more to this book than what you think when you first read. Oh, it's like a thriller.
Yes, I agree. Okay, I'm still not over the Mrs. Danvers thing. Can we talk about her some more? Because, like, I'm sorry. In terms of a character, like, great character, super creepy. Even just the way that she was described when she first met her, she was like, she was gaunt like a skeleton. I was like, oh, like, just very creepy vibes, but also very well written.
So the thing about Mrs. Danvers for me, I feel like your scene was that closet scene where she's like, come touch all of Rebecca's things. Mine is when she tricked the narrator into making the dress for the ball. And then the narrator comes down and she finds out that that's the last dress that Rebecca ever wore at the last ball in Manderley. That's, I feel like, when the book was got good for me, because I was like, oh.
See, I was like, when there was the touching all of Rebecca's stuff, like all of her clothes, all of her things in her room, I was like, that's when it got real weird. And that's when I knew, like, something is off about Mrs. Danvers. Like, she is kind of obsessed with Rebecca. Very much so. And I think that she just could not let her go. And it was just a very weird situation to be in. Like, I know that everybody grieves differently, but it was like this weird sort of obsession.
I think it's interesting. Now, for the listeners, we both read this book, but I think we've only read it once in our lives. So we're probably missing some things. In my read of it, I understood that she came to the house with Rebecca. So I think she was originally Rebecca's servant. Like, she wasn't Maxim's staff. So I'm wondering if that played a role into it versus if she was, like, Frith or Robert or whatever his name is. Whereas I think those were just more staff that Maxim hired or they came with him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it was interesting because I think that you could really see that in her opinion of Rebecca compared to the other staffs. Like, I feel like the other staff, yes, they did like Rebecca for the most part, except for Frank. But I think that Mrs. Danvers, she really cared about Rebecca, and it was because they had grown up together.
I agree. I think her relationship with Rebecca's different. There's also the scene when she had that guy, the cousin, in the room, and then the narrator saw them. Yeah, so I think she had a whole different relationship with Rebecca. But also, there was something she didn't know about Rebecca, like why she went to the doctor.
Yes. I think Rebecca was a woman of many secrets, as we see in this book, and a woman of many different personalities. Like, I think that she chose exactly how she wanted to present to each person that she interacted with.
Yeah, it seems like she had separate lives. I also wonder the whole marrying Maxim thing, because it seemed like they presented this front as husband and wife, but the whole time they were just leading their own separate lives. Like, she had her own life in London, and Maxim's like, I don't care what you do there, have whoever over. But in Manderley, we pretend to be this couple.
Yeah.
But then things get messy when she starts bringing people to Manderley to the beach cottage.
Correct. And I also thought it was interesting at the end when they had the magistrate over, I think it was, and the magistrate was questioning Mrs. Danvers about, like, if Rebecca ever had any extramarital affairs. And she pretty much said no, she didn't, until she, like, realized that, oh, they're trying to pin this as a murder. And then I think she wanted to take back her words, but she couldn't.
I just wanted to make a comment. I feel like this whole second trial thing happened so fast. They found the body at the shipwreck. And then, what, like 3 days later, there was a trial?
What expedition in the judicial system? Jeez.
I started to think about, though, how much it has to do with Maxim de Winter's status in society, because there's this whole thing about how all the other people, the commoners, or even just, like, the regular rich people, seem to, like, look up to Manderley, the estate, I don't know if specifically Maxim or not. So I'm wondering, like, there's mentions of it in the book, too, as, oh, this is just formality. So I'm wondering if that's part of the reason it happened so fast, is they weren't really trying to find out what happened. They just wanted to, like, get on with it.
Yeah, I think you're very much right. I think that we even see that a little bit in the second trial, or the unofficial trial, if you will, because it seems like the magistrate was kind of just like, I'm going to be on Mr. De Winter's side until there's something that tells me that I cannot be.
Which ties us into the cousin. Favell, I think is his name, his last name?
Favell. Yeah, I think it's Favell.
It's interesting, because the story's being told from the narrator's perspective, I was almost rooting against him, right? But he was right the whole time.
Oh, he for sure was. So, speaking of Favell, when he first got introduced, who did you think he was? Like, before it was mentioned that he was the cousin.
I thought Mrs. Danvers had a lover or something. I don't know.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, he might be Danvers' lover. Or alternatively, I was like, maybe he's someone who had, like, romantic connections with Rebecca. But once they said that he was a first cousin, I was like, oh, no, 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 that wouldn't happen. And then I was like, and I've been proven wrong yet again.
Apparently, they were betrothed or something. I don't know what word they used, but they were, like, having a lovely old relationship, I guess.
I know. I was like, oh, okay. Not what I thought was going on.
I thought that too. Once I heard that it was a cousin, I'm like, oh, they're just cousins and he's worried about his cousin.
Yeah, I did think it was kind of weird though how Mr. De Winter, Maxim, was so touchy about him being over the first time. I thought that was kind of odd, but I did think about it and I was like, well, you know, kind of seemed like this guy is a little bit more, or I should say a little bit less reserved compared to a lot of people of the De Winter's status. So that's kind of why I thought he might have been, like, touchy about it. But it made a lot more sense as the book went on.
I have a question not necessarily relating to the plot of the book, but just with Manderley itself. Do you think you'd like living there? Because I was reading the scenes of how they sit and have tea on the porch, or, like, they have, like, lunch and stuff served. I'm like, that sounds kind of nice. But then I also think, I don't know if I would get bored there.
So I feel like I would like living there, but also I feel like it'd just feel a little eerie because it'd be so empty.
Yeah. Well, with the scenes about the ball and how many people they fit in there and all that, I was thinking when it's just you and your husband and staff, like, it's kind of like we've talked about before in other episodes, like, I would get freaked out in a house that was big enough that I didn't know if anyone else was home.
Yeah, I could see that. Also, I think just, like, if I was to live there, I 100% would not want staff the way that they have staff there, because I think it would just weird me out knowing that, like, at certain times, somebody's going to be cleaning your room, somebody's going to be coming in while you're sleeping to leave tea for you, somebody's going to be helping you with dressing, undressing. I was like, it's too much. I was like, maybe if somebody could cook my meals, that'd be fabulous. But I was like, but aside from that, that's too much.
I was going to say, if I had to pick a position, I feel like the kitchen staff is who I would keep, because the whole three meals a day, all set up, and afternoon tea, it sounds like a great life, independent from this book. Like, I would not want to live in Manderley itself, because it's kind of creepy.
It definitely is, and I think part of the reason why it feels creepy is because it explicitly talks about, like, there are certain sections of the mansion that are not used, like, the sections that used to be Rebecca's room and, like, all these other places. And it, like, talks about how everything was, like, covered so that there wouldn't be dust and stuff. And I just feel like that's just a weird feeling if you're living in a place, because it just feels like you're living with, a ghost. You know, I feel like it added that element to it, and that would just weird me out.
I agree. It's weird to have such a big house and not use all of it. Like, I understand not using all of it every day, but it's like they literally sectioned a whole wing of the house off. It's like, oh, we don't go there anymore. And that was the section that they were living in before, and the section that this book takes place in was the guest wing. Also, a guest wing? I feel like our generation is just hoping for a guest room.
True. A guest basement would even do.
But, oh yeah, this reminded me of when we were reading the Christmas murder game, how there was a morning room, and this house had a morning room.
Yeah.
I just think when I read that, I was still thinking it's, like, wild to have a house so big, you have different rooms that you sit in at different times of the day. Because I just sit in the living room.
It's true. It is kind of crazy. I don't know. I also look at it and I'm like, where are these places located? Like, I feel like they must be out in the middle of nowhere, kind of, you know, because I'm sorry, but I don't see an estate in the middle of the city.
No. But to that point, I forget what character said it, but one character in the book was talking about how Manderley's going to be carved up for, like, I forget what they use, but essentially, like, condos or smaller houses. I think it's one of the tourists, maybe.
I must have missed that.
I just thought that's interesting because I feel like that's what happens these days with larger properties, is that they're eventually carved up.
Also, I think that we need to talk a little bit about the fact that Maxim was a murderer, and that, like, as soon as our unnamed main character found out, she was just like, yeah, I guess I'm cool with that. Let's keep going.
Yeah, she was literally just like, oh, so you didn't love Rebecca? Cool. We're good.
Yeah, she was like, that was my main concern. Like, the fact that you murdered her, totally secondary. I just thought you really missed her, and that was really getting my goat.
Yeah. I guess that kind of ties into, like, why she went with him. I think, obviously, while in France, there was probably, like, an allure of this, like, older rich man paying attention to her. Also, her companion that she was traveling with was kind of not a pleasant person to be around, so I think she might have been looking for an out.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it also kind of goes back to class. Like, this was a very rare opportunity for her to jump significantly in class. And I just look at that, and I think that she felt that very much so when she was proposed to. Also, for Maxim's proposal, can we talk about the way that he talked to her? He was like, I'm proposing to you, you little fool. Like, I think it was not exactly those words, but I know that he called her, like, a little fool somewhere in there. And he would call her that, like, throughout their relationship. And I was like, this is just too weird.
I feel like he didn't really seem to, at least outwardly, like and love her until he told her that he murdered Rebecca and she was cool with it. Then when she was cool with it, he's like, okay, we're good.
Yeah. And I feel like also he stopped calling her names like that after she found out that Rebecca was murdered, because I feel like you see that personality change in her where she's no longer so insecure and so like a child.
Yeah.
And so I feel like he kind of recognized that and was like, I can't call her these things anymore. She would not take it well.
There was a shift because she says it herself where she's not going to take it from anybody anymore. I've obviously modernized the language, but that was the sentiment. And how she was saying, oh, when I get back, I'm going to start bossing the staff around, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Maxim is an odd character.
That relationship is odd because you wonder what was he looking for. I think, like you said, she's obviously, I mean, I don't know, but it seems like she's looking for socioeconomic stability, right?
Definitely.
But was he getting out of it?
I don't know. And, like, everybody kept making comments about how she was so young. It was, like, kind of weird. And I feel like it also just put a greater emphasis on, like, their age gap relationship in a way that made it seem like it wouldn't have been a good match. Or, like, not something that people would have chosen for them. And that's not to say that, like, age gap relationships can't work. I think that every relationship is different. I just think that it was just very heavily recognized in this book. They were like, oh, like, you're so young compared to him. And it was just kind of odd.
I think it might have been like that to emphasize her naivete.
I think you're right.
Because she kind of was a little clueless of the world.
Oh, for sure she was. Did you like her character better before or after she found out about Rebecca's murder?
I think she became more interesting after.
I agree. I think that I preferred her personality afterwards just because I think before she was so incredibly insecure and it was just kind of heartbreaking to watch her be so insecure in everything that she did.
Right. I think reading it too, at some points I'd be like, oh, here's another I'm not as good as Rebecca, like, paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Actually, let's talk about the ball. The fashion ball. I put it down as the fashion ball, which is totally not what they called it. But they did call it something, like, interesting, like the fancy dress or something. It struck me as odd, and it made me giggle, and I wondered if it was because that's how she refers to it because she's not from that society.
It was definitely a costume party. And this is one of the scenes. There's another point I can bring up later when we talk about the characters. But this was a scene where I was like, oh yeah, I feel like all classics are a little bit racist. And by a little, I mean a lot.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like when they had people dressing up as people from other cultures, I was like, ooh, no.
Also, when the narrator was trying to surprise them on what her costume was going to be, and how Maxim says, I don't care what you do as long as you don't paint your face black and act like a monkey.
I definitely missed that line, but that's horrible.
It was not great. I felt very cringy, and it was one of the moments where I was like, should I even read this book? Like, what do we do with classics?
When do we draw the line, I guess? But I think it's something that we wouldn't have known before we started reading. I certainly didn't anticipate that. I don't know if you did.
No, I feel like every time I read a classic, there's something that doesn't stand these days. But that one, I feel like, might have been the worst thing I've read in a classic.
Yeah.
I haven't read a lot of classics, so, like, there's probably other things out there. But, like, that one, I was like, that one wasn't even veiled in any sort of way. That was, like, just straight up racist.
That was really bad. I look at it and I'm like, I think that that's just, honestly, I think it's just awful that they would have something like that in a book. It's just racist and there's no excuse for it.
And I wonder, like, when you read stuff like that, and I think there's conversations about this in, I don't know, Bookstagram or literary world, where because this is the foundation for so many other, like, thriller suspense books, at what point do we just replace this one of the more modern ones that doesn't have all that horrible language?
True. And I think that that's a good conversation that should be had, because I think that if you're constantly hearkening back to that as, like, your quote-unquote gold standard as a classic, right? I think that that can be very damaging. And that's something that, like, we would see in art a lot, too. So not just even in literature, but in art, a lot of the times, all of the classic masterworks, I mean, you listening can't hear or can't see this, but I'm doing air quotes with my hands. Almost all of them are old, dead white men. Like, there's no diversity in what we consider to be a masterwork. And I think it's a tragedy because we really need to have more diversity in what we deem as being something valuable.
And I was not an English major in any sense. I also hated when they made us read old books in high school. I think a lot of it was the being forced to read a certain thing. So I did a lot of my reading, like, of classics afterwards. But when you look at what they made you read in high school in English, I think they're all old, dead English people.
Yeah. And I look at that and I'm like, that's just, I don't know. I just feel as though that's so wrong. Like, I think that there needs to be more diversity in what we consider to be a classic, because then you're kind of saying that if it doesn't uphold these standards of the time, right, where it was like, oh, we're only going to publish work by people who fit this certain demographic, or we're only going to consider it as high literature if you fit this certain demographic. I feel like that's just so damaging. And I think that there are so many good works out there. Like, why are we still doing that?
I think, for example, we read a ton of Shakespeare. There's nothing inherently wrong with reading that because it is a quote classic, and it's like, maybe we should expose the youth to it. But I think diversifying in the sense of, instead of reading like three Shakespeare plays in a year, read one and then read some by other playwrights.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that that would be a much better use of everyone's time. Shall we get back to the book?
What I think is interesting is I think some of the staff were dropping little breadcrumbs about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I have a note about Frank telling the narrator about Rebecca dying in the sailing accident. And at that point when I read it, I was wondering, because I knew going into this book that Maxim killed Rebecca. And so I was wondering, like, how much of these things that the staff is telling the narrator they think are true versus how much of it are they covering for Maxim?
I would say a good chunk of it was probably covering for Maxim, because it seemed like they didn't really want to talk about it, but they kind of did. You know, I feel like they kind of wanted her to know, but they were like, I don't want to be the one to tell you.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because I feel like they probably all felt morally obligated, like, she should know this, but also, I can't tell you this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I forget who the character is, but kind of like, to me, he seemed like the equivalent of like a detective or something. The guy at the end of the book who was driving around in the car with them when they went up to London.
The magistrate?
That guy, yeah.
Yeah, I never remember his name. I think it was like Julian or something.
I think Julius.
I just call him the magistrate because I don't remember his name and I don't want to mess it up.
So if you read this, whoever that guy is, I feel like the whole time he didn't really care what happened. Because Favela's going on this whole rant about how basically something sketchy happened to Rebecca. And the narrator even said, oh, it's good that Favela is drunk. Because the magistrate is just kind of being all like, oh, you're drunk. This isn't true. Write it off. I don't know if he really believed that, oh, Favela's drunk. He's making it up. Or if the magistrate was using that as an excuse to brush it under the rug.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I feel like the magistrate at first was like, this isn't true. You're making it up, because he was acting kind of like, again, not what you would think of in their society. Not conforming to the society's standards, which is not to say that he wasn't, like, giving good information or anything, because clearly he was. But I think that it was kind of a, let me brush this off with your personality or with the fact that you're drinking.
Yeah.
But then I think as, like, more evidence kept coming out, I feel like then he started to take it more seriously, and he was like, I actually agree with him. I don't think that she committed suicide.
Yeah. And then if we're following what happens next, they take the whole road trip up to London. Clearly HIPAA is not a thing in this time. I mean, I know HIPAA's America and this takes place in England, but I'm assuming modern day England has their own version of HIPAA. And first of all, this doctor just straight up took medical records home when he retired. Second of all, he seems to just be handing them out to anybody.
Oh, yeah. And also, it did make me wonder, because the end result was not what I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought she was going to be pregnant, and then it was going to be, like, an open and shut case. Like, he definitely killed her because she was pregnant, and he didn't want to have it. Because remember, there was that whole conversation about the heir, and it was like, if she has an heir, or if she has a baby, regardless of whether or not it's his, that child will get everything.
See, I was thinking, because it seemed like kind of a secret trip, I thought she was going there to get an abortion. And then it was like, nope, not it. So I was wrong on that. I thought it was like a dead giveaway of that, because she's doing the secret trip. No one knows when she's there. She has a fake name, which she used Mrs. Danvers' name. Very interesting.
Yeah. Also, I wondered if Mrs. Danvers actually lied about her not having any idea about the appointment. And it was truly Mrs. Danvers who was seen that day. And Rebecca was just accompanying her.
Okay, so that's what I was wondering when I first saw that it said Mrs. Danvers, and they just assumed that it was Rebecca. I guess the difference is they asked the doctor, oh, is it someone tall, dark hair or something? And the doctor said, yes. Yeah. So unless he was lying too, it did not sound like the description of Mrs. Danvers. Like you said, she was kind of described as a skeleton. Not very flattering, by the way.
I don't know. It was just very interesting. And then I feel like the end result was reason enough to believe, like, oh, she may have taken her own life. Like, it really lent itself to supporting that suicide conclusion, I felt. Mm-hmm. But I also thought that it was interesting that towards the end of the book, did you notice how at the end of the book, it was, like, kind of like they were driving back to Manderley, but it seemed like they weren't at the same time? So did they officially drive to Switzerland? Was that what happened?
Okay, so I was really confused because when I read the book, it sounded like they headed back to Manderley, and I was confused because the book opens with her abroad. So if you don't know, this whole book is a look back of what happened. So I was confused if they went back to Manderley, how did they get abroad? But then when I was listening to the first half of the Novel Pairings podcast, they were saying how Manderley was on fire, and I totally missed that part because I thought the description was describing a sunset. But apparently Manderley was on fire, so I think they were going to Manderley, but then they saw it on fire and they left and went to Switzerland. Which question, who set it on fire? Because that was not an accident.
Let's be honest, it was probably either Mrs. Danvers or Favela, if he got there first.
Well, Here's the thing for it being Mrs. Danvers is that I think it was Frank, I don't remember who, it's whoever Maxim called on the way back, who said that Mrs. Danvers just peaced out in the middle of the afternoon. Like, she was cleaning her room, a car came and took her stuff, and she left. So where did she go? Why did she leave?
She definitely left because she realized that Maxim had for sure killed Rebecca. And I do wonder to some extent if she had already known, because she was like, I wanted to punish him too for the whole ball thing. So I did wonder if, like, she knew already. I wasn't positive. I feel like she might have had an inkling, but also I don't think it fully occurred to her that he could have done that to her until they were talking about it with Favell. And I almost kind of wonder if Favell had came to talk to her about that earlier, and maybe that's why he came for that initial visit.
Yeah, because I do wonder, why is he visiting Mrs. Danvers? Mm-hmm. Maybe he was kind of saying, hey, this is my theory of what actually happened. And also, maybe because, I don't know what he said to Maxim before, but I wonder if Maxim had a feeling that this guy knew what really happened. And that's another reason why he wanted him nowhere near the property, because he didn't want him telling anybody.
Yeah, didn't want him telling anybody, or also maybe just didn't want him investigating.
Yeah. I know we jumped to the end of the book, but to rewind a little bit, because I just want to get this in, because it ties back to our earlier conversation too. And also, I think it's good for listeners to know, if they haven't read the book and they want to, that this is in there. There is really kind of disturbing treatment of I don't know what type of intellectual challenges or disabilities this character has, but there is a character in the book, and they feel like this was common in the olden days, but they kept calling him an idiot.
Yeah, and it seemed like he just had some, like, mental challenges or disabilities where it was just, like, I don't know. I did feel like his treatment was really, really poor, though, and especially they... Like, he was convinced that they were going to send him to an asylum. And for me, I thought that that was just so heartbreaking, because I was like, clearly, he's doing nothing wrong. Like, he's just living his life, and this poor man has to worry about being sent off to an asylum, like, all the time. Because it was very clear that at least previously, someone, I'm going to say likely Rebecca, had threatened him to send him to an asylum.
Yeah, I thought it might have been Rebecca. I was also thinking, because there are... Favell is convinced that... I forget what his name is. Ben, I think? Favell was convinced Ben saw Rebecca being murdered. So I was wondering also if Maxim says, don't tell anyone or I'm going to send you to an asylum. Which is a horrible thing to threaten somebody for, when, at least based on the reading, it's like, all he really did was wander the beach by himself.
Yeah, and I feel like he, you know, never did any harm, never meant anyone any harm, and I feel like it was just really hard to see their treatment of him, because they really didn't treat him well. I feel like our main character treated him just fine. Although I will say, sometimes she was, like, kind of weird about, like, how she spoke about him. Like, that was not cool, for sure. But she was never, like, threatening to take action against him in any particular way. Actually, no, I think, honestly, let me strike that phrase. I don't think she treated him well. Now that I'm reflecting, I don't think that she treated him well. I think that she still had pretty malicious thoughts about him, but I don't think she ever acted upon them. Like, an action like, I'm going to send you to an asylum, etc.
I think also when Favell first came to the house and the magistrate was there and everybody was in the room and they brought him in to ask him if he saw Maxim or anyone hurt Rebecca. I feel like they were really just, like, exploiting him in that situation, and, like, possibly exploiting the fact that he may not be able to fully understand what's going on.
Yeah, and I look at it too, and it really bothered me how they would always be talking about him as though he wasn't there. Like, Favell especially was like, oh, so he did such a good job for you. You're gonna send him home with a meal as a reward. I'm sorry, that's so rude. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, so I guess overall thoughts, like, I enjoyed the book. It was an interesting read, but I think it is something to be aware of, that this is a classic, and I think it does show its age.
Definitely.
And it does have at least two specific things that I thought were extremely problematic with it.
Definitely. What did you think of the writing style itself?
I thought it was very descriptive.
Yeah, I do remember you texting me about a 3-page description of a driveway.
You had not gotten there at that point.
I had not. One thing I will say is I think the author is obsessed with the word rhododendrons. Like, the amount of times she mentioned specifically the rhododendrons, I was like, oh my, we get it. I literally had to look up the flower because I was like, what is this flower she keeps going on about? I think she just likes the way it sounds. Like, I don't even think she cared that they were rhododendrons. I think she just loved the sound of the flower and was like, this is my flower.
I think we may have them in the front yard. I think if we're going off, like, silly theories of why it said so much, is I think she learned how to spell it and was just very proud of herself and just put it everywhere. Because I have no idea how to spell that. I think there's, like, a random H somewhere for no reason.
Yeah, it's at the beginning. It's like R-H-O-D-O-D-E-N-D-R-O-N-S. Watch as I've misspelled it on this podcast.
But yeah, I don't know. That is funny. Maybe it's her favorite flower.
It could be. But I felt like it suited her writing. Like, it was kind of, like, flowery. And yeah, I don't know.
It's funny because every time I've read a really long description of something, which I feel like this is a very good example of, like, the whole show don't tell thing, but I also kept thinking about how Kaylee doesn't like character-driven based stuff because it's just, like, long things and nothing happens. And so every time I read some really long description of, like, a bush or the garden or the driveway, I was like, oh.
See, I feel like I could get past that this time because, like, I think I like some books that feel like they've got some tea going on. Like, something is happening. And this book definitely had that going on because you were, like, trying to figure out, like, what happened? What's going to happen? This is clearly not going to go well, but why is it not going to go well? And so I feel like for that reason, I did enjoy, for the most part, I enjoyed this book more than other classics, though, like you said before, I think there are definitely some really problematic things happening in this book.
There is one character we didn't talk about. I know we're running a little long on this one, but Beatrice, what did you think of Beatrice? Her relationship with Maxim, her relationship with the narrator. I feel like I don't really know what her point was, but I also, like, kind of liked when she showed up.
Yeah, I feel like Beatrice was a genuinely nice person, and I feel like everybody around her just thought that she was a fool for no reason. I was like, why are you all so mean to her? Like, she's the one person who's nice to our unnamed main character out of everyone in this book. She's probably nicer to her than her husband is, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, she did get her the drawing books, which I thought was sweet. She could have treated her grandma a little better, I think.
Yeah, I feel like generally Beatrice's treatment of people sometimes, I think it's sometimes pointed to a little bit of naivete as well. I feel like it was just she didn't have the proper skills or know-how to know how to treat people all the time.
I wonder if some of it is she's definitely nicer than the rest of the characters, but I think also she grew up with Maxim in that giant house, right? So I feel like she is very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could affect her behavior.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think that's all the biggest characters, unless there's someone else you wanted to mention.
I really liked Frank. That's all I will say.
Yeah. Was he the one who had his own separate little, like, apartment office thing?
Yeah, he was the one who our main character considered more like a friend.
Yeah.
And she asked him, like, all the questions about Rebecca. And he was, like, kind of uncomfy in answering. He was like, I can answer you some questions, but this will make me uncomfortable. And he, I feel like, was the person who knew what went on and just kind of was very much in the mindset of, I will mind my own business.
Ooh, so quick question. So at the end, and Maxim thinks that Rebecca wanted him to kill her because Maxim also seemed a little paranoid because he was always like, oh, Rebecca's always playing this game. She always wants to win. And this is her last thing and her last, like, win. Do you think she really was manipulating him into doing that, or that was his justification? Like, oh, she made me do this. Because she did have that terminal diagnosis, if we didn't clearly state that. She had, like, a deformity of the uterus that was cancerous or something like that.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't think I have a strong opinion either way, because I could see where it might have been that she truly did manipulate him into it, because by some other people she was described as snake-like. So it just makes me feel as though she definitely had a very manipulative relationship, generally speaking. But I think it's also maybe because we're seeing Maxim through our main character's eyes. And the main character is like, he can do no wrong. He is my husband. And so I think for that reason, it makes me hesitant to fully say like, yeah, she totally manipulated him. And that was why he did what he did. Because I think it could have also just been that maybe she didn't expect that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how one would expect someone to go and kill you. Like, that's kind of a dramatic measure.
I agree. I think I could be swayed either way. I also wonder if I ever read it again, if I could pick up more things that would solidify an opinion on either side. Because I think it is ambiguous, and I think the author possibly left it intentionally that way.
And I also look at it, and I think that part of the reason why I'm hesitant to say for sure, like, she manipulated him is because I generally don't like Maxim as a character. Because I don't like the way that he talks to people, and I especially don't like the way he talks to our main character.
Right. Like, I could see him doing it because he was jealous about the affairs, independent of this diagnosis.
Exactly.
I don't have anything else unless you do. Oh, I guess, who would this book be for? Would you recommend it?
I think I'd recommend it with reservations, just because I think in terms of writing style, I did like the writing style, but I think you need to definitely give a caveat to whoever's reading this book. Like, there is going to be some things that are just socially not acceptable. So as long as you're braced for that, and if you feel like you could still read it after knowing that, go ahead and give it a read. But if you think that that's something that would upset you greatly, it might not be the book for you.
I think I would recommend it specifically to people who enjoy reading thriller and suspense novels, because it does seem to have an influence on other works today. And like you said, just attaching that caveat to it. Also, I think a lot of times people don't want to give money when other, like the things about Ben and the things about the costume party, they don't want to give money to the author. If you don't want to do that, get it from your library.
It's true.
If you're still curious and still want to read it. Or just read it on Wikipedia. Read the summary. It's probably close enough if you're just curious on how its influence on other books, you know?
Yeah, or if you are curious on its influence on other books, see if you can find a modern book that has a similar theme where it's likened to this book, and then you might be able to circumvent some of those issues.
But yeah, I thought it was an interesting read overall. I think it is interesting for us to occasionally dive into the classics.
Yeah, I think it was a good way to read a classic, because I haven't read a classic since probably like high school. Well, aside from when we read it for the pod. But it was definitely a good way to be introduced to a classic for sure. Our next book club is going to be Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid, and that will be dropping on February 5th.
We hope you enjoyed our thoughts on Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this book if you've read it. So send them over to our email, millennialspodcast@gmail.com, or DM us on Instagram @millennialspodcast. And don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you're listening.